The following message was delivered by Dennis Fisher. Mr. Fisher is a long-standing member of God's Church and has given numerous messages concerning God's plan and His work. And now, Dennis Fisher.
Brethren, I'd like to begin by asking you a question. Is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? Now, let me ask this again. Is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? Now, I'm not asking if it is possible for you to be charmed into sinning. The answer to that question is assuredly yes. In Romans chapter 3, verse 23, it says, "All have sinned and come short of the glory of God." The influences around us can exert great force against our will and lead us to sin. Brethren, we sin because we have a nature that drives us to sin. In Proverbs, it says, "There is a way that seems right to a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death." Everything in his nature, all the empirical senses cry out and say, this is an appropriate thing to do, when in fact it isn't. In Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 23, it says, "Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his own steps." And here what Jeremiah is saying is man is not morally equipped to direct his own steps. Man, apart from God, does not have the capacity to even grasp righteousness, let alone to practice it or even to sustain it. Man's nature goes totally contrary to God's nature. But I'm going to go back and ask this question again. Is it possible for you not to sin, but is it possible for you to be charmed in to abandoning your view of morality? Brethren, we sin because we are not strong enough to overcome our own nature. In other words, we sin because we are weak. This principle was understood by Jesus Christ. He said, "The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." The Apostle Paul understood this weakness of the flesh all too well and spoke about it in the 7th chapter of the book of Romans. I'd like you to go there now. Romans chapter 7, and we're going to pick it up in verse 14. Romans 7, verse 14. And I want you to think about this in the context of sin, but specifically in the context of, is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass, your understanding of what is right and what is wrong? And here in verse 14, here's what the Apostle Paul says. "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do I allow not, for what I would, that do I not, but what I hate, that I do. If then I do that which I would not, I consent unto the law that it is good. Now then it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. For the good that I would do, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do. Now if I do that I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law, that when I would do good, evil is present with me. For I delight in the law of God after the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin which is in my members." And then he concludes this, "O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death?" Brethren, we sin because we are weak. Our nature is defined by weakness. But what about our moral compass? What makes us compromise it? Well, in order to understand this, what I'd like to do is to provide a definition of a moral compass, okay, so we can understand what the context of this question is. Our moral compass is a core belief system that drives our understanding and our application of right and wrong, good and evil, decency and indecency. In a very real sense, brethren, our moral compass is our spiritual will. So when Paul was talking about to will was present in me, in other words, he wasn't arguing that he didn't understand what sin was. His problem was that in this struggle, this human struggle, which all of us are engaged in, he would fail, as do we. But this is different, brethren. Is it possible for you to change your whole attitude about what sin is? Brethren, let's examine what the source of our moral compass is. Because that moral compass is not hardwired into us. We don't have, by our very nature, an abhorrence of evil. Our moral compass is actually, in a very real sense, programmed and created by the influences in our life. I'll give you a couple of examples. As children, our moral compass is molded by our parents, our teachers, our peers, society, and even our faith. And brethren, everyone has a moral compass. And to illustrate this point, I'm just going to ask some questions, okay? These are questions that will activate your moral compass. It is not going to make that compass work very hard, as you will readily find out as you hear the questions. But here are a couple of questions. Is it okay to commit murder? Now, my guess is people didn't have to process that too much. They would have said, well, of course not. Murder is wrong. There's something immoral about it. Is it okay to steal? Is it okay to lie? Now, each one of these things, you ask just about anybody, even in the secular world, and they're going to come up with a fairly quick answer. No, lying's not supposed to, you're not supposed to do it. Stealing, no, that's not good. Murder, of course not. Well, here's one. What about adultery? Is it okay to commit adultery? And now, all of a sudden, there may be people where the lines become a little blurred. If you would have asked this at some time in the past, that would have been easy to say no to. So now I want to do a little exercise, just to kind of get you into the mindset that we need to explore here, brethren. So I'd like to ask you, how would America view the following questions 50 years ago? My guess is now you can probably see where this is going, okay? Look at America 50 years ago, and if I were to go back in time and actually interview just the typical American, how do you think they would answer the following questions? Is abortion wrong? Now, how do you think this question would be answered 50 years ago? What about homosexuality? Is that wrong? How would people answer this 50 years ago? Is it okay for unmarried couples to live together? Now, brethren, we're in the 50s now. How do you think America would generally, the consensus in America, how do you think they would feel about that question? Here's one for you. Can teenagers be sexually active and at the same time be sexually responsible? I want you to think about this in the terms of, this was asked 50 years ago. Would Americans then have a real difficult time? Would they struggle with these questions? Or would their answers be fairly clear? Brethren, today society has been charmed into abandoning its moral compass. It has embraced a morality that is openly defiant to what were once the core values of our society. My guess is, brethren, every one of those questions would have been easy to answer for our society years ago, 50 years ago. Today, it is much different. Brethren, the erosion of our national values has saturated our country, and its concept of morality has been radically altered. Our entire culture has immersed us in a new set of values, and we cannot escape the force of its message. Even within the church, society exerts enormous influence on people inside God's community of faith. I want you to consider how our values are defined today. Movies define them. That alone should make us a little bit nervous. Music defines our values. Television defines our values. And believe it or not, these things, at least movies and television, were not enormous influences on our lives 50 years ago. Yeah, we had television, but it was in its early stages. Yes, there were movies, but they were nowhere near the way they are today. The print media exerts an enormous influence on our moral compass and helps define what we believe is right and wrong. Fashion also does it. If you look at the way people dress and how that dress expresses them, fashion has altered the way we think. Speech, here's one. Consider the way people would speak 50 years ago and consider the way they speak today. You know, one thing that should be very noticeable, brethren, is the presence of vulgarity and profanity in the normal process of discourse in our world today. I want to talk about a couple of these items. Let's talk about movies for a second. And once again, here's the question. Is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? Could you become so desensitized to things that the things that you would have normally thought were abhorrent and terribly wrong at one point, now you think are probably fairly innocent and tame and may not be so bad after all? Let's look at movies. I want you to think of the last movie you went to in light of this question. So, I'm going to give you a second. Do you remember the last movie you saw? Okay, so this is going to be kind of a large survey of the audience here. Okay, have you got it? Okay. Was any profanity used in the movie? Now think about the movie that you saw. Did the movie contain any gratuitous violence? That's a tough word to say, but you understand what I'm saying. Did the movie contain gratuitous violence? If you saw something with Arnold Schwarzenegger in it or Sylvester Stallone in it, the answer is probably yes. What about sex disguised as love? Now think about this in terms of the last movie you saw. Now here's one. Did any of the characters in the movie possess what you would regard as virtue and honor? Let's move away from the movies now, okay? Let's think about music. Because our music encourages behavior today that goes totally contrary to the scriptures. Do you know a song? I want you to think of just some of the songs that are out there. Do you know songs that encourage sex? You'd be probably better off asking teenagers, but my guess is if they're really honest with themselves, the answer would be yes. What about violence or defiance to authority? You know, when I grew up, a very popular singer was Barry Manilow. And he had a song, and it was called Even Now. And it was a very beautiful ballad, and I mean, just really, really catchy. It was a real strong melody. I got the lyrics to the song, and we would just sing along with him and think nothing of it. Here are the lyrics to Barry Manilow's song, Even Now. I'm not going to do all of them, but I'll give you an idea. Even now, when there's someone else who cares, when there's someone home who's waiting just for me, even now I think about you as I'm climbing up the stairs, and I wonder what to do so she won't see. And this is the theme of this, okay? Him fantasizing about somebody that was a love interest in his life in times past, and now he continues to think of her when he's going home to his wife or his love interest now. Here's the question. Can you be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? Let's take television, okay? Television has now become the opiate of the masses. And the most popular sitcoms on television today are filled with double entendres and innuendo. Lots of subtle messages are being spun through television. And if you think about the message that they convey about society and what is moral, what is decent, what is godly, what is right, and these programs are radically different from what they were just a few decades ago. How about the print media? You think the print media doesn't influence what we think, how we think, and how we view morality? You know, tabloid reporting actually defines what is important in our national fabric. You know, the things that really turn our head and capture our attention. It's the O.J. Simpson trial back in 1995. We were obsessed with it. A trial that just concluded recently was the Scott Peterson trial. Okay, and everybody was just obsessed with this. Okay, and this is the thing that is captured in the print media. It isn't the deep and thoughtful stories. It's war, scandal, political corruption, and intrigue. These are the things that kind of define who we are. And brethren, our children see this. And I actually did something. I went to a magazine stand on a street corner. And I just wanted to get kind of an idea of what is it. And by the way, the magazine stand was very close to a high school. And kids would walk right by this magazine stand. I mean, hundreds if not thousands of kids would walk by every day by this newsstand. It was a very large public high school that probably had, you know, 3,000, 4,000, maybe 5,000 students in the school. And I saw a magazine. It's a woman's magazine, but it's a respectable magazine. Okay, and kids would stop by and they would pick it up. And so I thought, well, I'm going to grab this magazine and just see what these young girls are reading here. And I'll just look. I'm not going to go through the magazine. I'll just look at the cover. It'll tell me what the stories are. I'm not making this up, brethren. Okay, I wrote every title on the magazine. So I'm going to tell you the good stories, the bad stories, and this type of thing. But this is what these girls, and they were one after another, after another, after another, picked up this magazine. Here were the titles of the articles. The first one was, I was the high school slut, and look at me now. I'm not making this up, brethren. Another one, 10 hottest soap studs get kissed and tell. Third one, 15 most common sex gripes. 7 do you dump him doozies? Can you imagine children reading this? Safe men to sleep with after a breakup. This is one of the articles. Brethren, I wrote every one of these down. So there's got to be something coming up that would be tolerable for us. Celeb affairs cheat sheet. Who's doing what to whom in Hollywood? There's an article. The top 10 psychics and how to reach them. And then the last one was called How Wild Was That? Sex in Public Places, 20 Juicy Confessions. This on a magazine that was displayed in a prominent news area where kids by the scores, the hundreds if not thousands, walk by every day. And they were attracted to the magazine, brethren. They were picking this magazine up. So here's the question. Can you be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? Can what you believe is right and wrong, could it be altered by the environment around you? Here's one: fashion. Current fashion is designed to send messages of power and seduction, and we're only kidding ourselves if we believe otherwise. Modest, brethren, is a term that has been abandoned by the industry. If you look at the way so many people dress, and it is because an influence of society has exerted a pressure and said, this is now the uniform, and it is not modest. Here's one: speech and communication. Have we become desensitized, brethren? Has our moral compass kind of just been worn down as a result of speech and communication? Today, vulgar language is commonplace in the workplace, and it even comes out of the mouth of children. I want you to go to any high school and listen to the vulgarity that is a part of everyday language. Listen to the lyrics of songs or movies. We, brethren, have become desensitized to a society that speaks corruptly, not morally. And here's the question again, brethren. Can you be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? Now, I want to kind of make a little turn here, because these were secular examples. And I want to give you examples that might be a little closer to home and will illustrate the point here of this message. Has the erosion of our moral compass actually taken place within God's church? Has the erosion of our moral compass taken place within God's church? Now, what I want to do is I'm going to invoke the name of the Worldwide Church of God. The intent here is not to go blasting them, but it illustrates a point. I want you to think of this, and most of us have a worldwide background. I want you to go back 20 years, 25 years in worldwide. Okay, so now we're talking to the adults, but this is designed to illustrate a point. Okay, and think of this in the context of, is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass, this set of core beliefs that drives what you think is right and wrong? Now, I want you to think of worldwide in terms of the following questions. In other words, how would the Worldwide Church of God answer these questions, not now, but 20 years ago, 25 years ago? Is it okay to routinely work on the Sabbath? What do you think they would say back in 1980? Can I keep Christmas and worship the true God in doing so? What do you think they'd say? How about Easter? Can I do that? Here's one. Can I have a ham sandwich? And can I eat it on the Day of Atonement? Here's one. Can I worship the true God as a Catholic? Now, I want you to think of this once again in the terms of the moral core, the moral compass of the Worldwide Church of God 20 years ago. 25 years ago. Here's one. Do I have to keep the Feast of Tabernacles? How do you think they would respond to that? If you ask somebody in 1985. Do you have to keep the Feast of Tabernacles? Do you think they would struggle with this? Do you think they would wonder about this and say, well, let me ponder this. Let's go investigate this. How do you think the typical member of the Worldwide Church of God would process this piece of information? Once they heard the question, now the wheels are turning, and how long do you think it would take for them to offer an answer to it? Here's one. Do I have to obey the Ten Commandments to enter God's kingdom? Brethren, I don't know how you think they would have answered, but here's just a personal observation. Today, if you ask these questions, every one of them would be answered differently than they were 20 years ago. Brethren, there are tens of thousands of people who strongly believed, had a core belief, had a moral compass that drove their beliefs and their understanding of God, the Scriptures, and their relationship to Him, that are radically different today than they were just a few years ago. I'll give you an example of a typical response. There are people that were in God's church who used to love the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, obviously, in God's church today, the most of them probably still love the Feast of Tabernacles. My family looks forward to it, 6 months in advance. All the preparations are being made, and we are just immensely excited about it. But there was a time when all of God's people loved the feast. It was a great time to get together and to have tremendous reunions. And it was something that kids and adults alike longed for that time. Today, there are virtually thousands who now regard it as oppressive, burdensome, and even wrong to keep. Brethren, is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? And what I'm really asking is, what about us? Can the things that have happened, can the realignment of the moral compass of virtually thousands of our brethren, could it happen to us? I want you to consider how our opinions have changed in a few areas. Tithing. Has your opinion of tithing changed over the years? Because now there are many who argue that tithing is not in force in the new covenant. And there are probably movements over this. How about the Sabbath? Today, greater emphasis is placed on pleasure than on purpose. Now, brethren, I've been in the church for a long time. Okay, I'm going on 40 years in the church since I was baptized. And I have seen a radical change and a disintegration in the observance of the Sabbath. It is far more casual in its approach. People do all kinds of things on this day that we never would have thought would have been appropriate just a few years ago. How about government and leadership? Today, there is a greater emphasis on self-government. And this is something that has crept into the church. Brethren, society has been charmed into abandoning its moral compass. What about you? Today, thousands of God's children who had His truth and held a system of core beliefs that reflected God's way have abandoned their moral compass. For the same reason society has abandoned its moral compass. Not because we are weak, brethren, but because we are lazy. Brethren, lethargy and complacency is a mortal enemy to the core beliefs that define our faith. And brethren, we must be willing to fight to preserve that faith. And this is a principle that is woven throughout the Scriptures. Here's what it says in Jude 3. Earnestly contend for the faith once delivered. It is a contest in a sense that you must be willing to battle for it. Not passively think that it is just going to hang with you. 1 Corinthians 9:27, the Apostle Paul actually acknowledged that even though he preached Christ, that it was possible for him to lose his reward. He says, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. That the Apostle Paul himself acknowledged that even though he was doing a great work in proclaiming the gospel of Christ, that there was a risk in his life that he could lose it all, that he had to discipline himself to protect his moral compass. In Revelation chapter 3, verse 11, it says, behold, I come quickly, hold fast that which you have, that no man takes your crown. Here's something that Jesus said in Luke 9, verses 62. It says, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. Brethren, is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? Well, it is if you are not prepared to fight to preserve it, to fight to keep it, and you are fighting against a will. In Matthew chapter 24, and I'd like you to go there because I want to talk to you just briefly about what the impact of that fight is. What it is going to cost, potentially cost God's people. And the only way this fight is going to be won is if that moral compass, that moral will that is anchored so intimately and powerfully to God's word is preserved. And the only way it's going to happen, brethren, it has to be exercised constantly throughout our lives. Daily, we must exercise that faith and keep our will, sustain this will. In Matthew 24, verse 9, here's what they say is going to happen to people. Now imagine somebody whose moral will is easily compromised, has been completely atrophied. Here's what it says. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. It isn't going to happen to the person that does not have a fixed moral compass. In Mark 13, verse 9, it says, but take heed to yourself, for they shall deliver you up to the councils, and in the synagogues you shall be beaten, and you shall be brought before rulers and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them. And then he goes on to say, you will be betrayed by members of your own family who think they do God's service in their betrayal. Brethren, in order to sustain that level of persecution, you must have a moral compass that is intimately, totally, and undeniably attached to God's mind, God's will, and God's word. And the only way you can ensure that this is going to take place is it must be exercised every day of our life. I want you to think of the people that you have known that were once a part of the community of faith, and what happened to them? What happened to so many of our brethren who now believe things that were so foreign to them just a few years ago? Brethren, Jesus warned that there would be religious deception, that there would be a tampering with this moral compass. In Matthew 24, it talks about many shall come in my name and deceive many. And it's the first of these ills that are now going to be thrust upon our earth during the last days is religious deception. That people are going to be convinced, swayed, persuaded into believing things that went contrary to the things that they believed. And it's absolutely unimaginable that this could happen. But we are eyewitnesses to this, brethren. We have seen people turn 180 degrees from a faith in a way that would absolutely, we never would have believed it had we not seen it. God warned his church to beware of those preaching about another Jesus. Paul pronounced a double curse to anyone who would preach another gospel. Peter, in 2 Peter, I believe it in the second chapter, he talks about there will be false teachers among you, bringing in damnable heresies, teaching things that go contrary to this, to the wisdom that we had been taught. Now, brethren, I am not suggesting for one minute that there isn't room for growth, and anyone that knows me, brethren, knows that that is the case. There is room for growth. There are understandings that can be expanded on, solidified, and strengthened, if you will, to where our wisdom on this can be made clearer. But that isn't what Peter is talking about. We're talking about heresies. People that will suggest that God's word says X when for years, decades, if you will, we understood it to be something radically different. In 1 John chapter 4, the Apostle John talks about we need to try the spirits. Why? Because many false prophets are gone out into the world. We must subject the spirits, subject the teachings to the scrutiny of the scriptures. We must try them. Here's the question, brethren. Is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? If anybody thinks the answer is no, I want you to look at perhaps the greatest exhibit of this in the history of God's church. If you look at our society today and the things that we see around, and if you talk to your children, adults, and ask what they think about things that you would think are just foreign to decency, and they can wink at it. Is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass? And that the answer is yes, brethren, unless, of course, we exercise that moral compass. I'd like to conclude with having everybody go to Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3. And I just want to end with this verse. And as you hear it, I want you to ponder it in connection with that question. Is it possible for you to be charmed, persuaded, enticed, fooled into abandoning your moral compass? I'm going to begin in verse 16. And then you can ask yourself if these people would be charmed into abandoning theirs. Then they that feared the Eternal spoke often one to another. Then they that feared the Eternal spoke often one to another, and the Eternal hearkened and heard it. And a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Eternal and that thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, says the Eternal of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spares his own son that serves him. Then shall they return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that serves him not. Brethren, one more time. Is it possible for you to be charmed into abandoning your moral compass?